love to pop, not soda.
It's pop. Like this. Pop.
Welcome to Pop, Not Soda. And now it's time for Brian and... Oh, damn. Enjoy the show!
Welcome, everyone, to Pop, Not Soda, your weekly sits patch of pop culture. Season 2, Episode 5.
Woo, baby.
Already our fifth episode. Tonight, we have a special guest, Mr. Sean Mangiarino. How are you doing tonight, Sean?
Welcome, welcome.
Doing very, very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us tonight. Brett, Brian, as always, how are you guys doing?
Doing well. I got part of my tax refund. State came early.
Ballin'.
First time California finishes first in just about anything. Maybe Mexicans crossing the border, but Texas probably has this, right? But yeah, I'm doing great.
How long do you think it'll take for the federal to come then?
I'm getting mine tomorrow.
You're getting yours, sir?
Damn. I didn't get notified that my state even came in, so I don't know.
Yeah, how early did you guys file it? Like end of January?
I filed it on the day I got my W-2.
Damn.
Yeah, I did it like the Monday I got mine.
Quick with it. Sean, you've got kids. How quick did you file that?
I have not filed yet. Damn. I don't know if my W-2s have come in yet. I should probably check my mailbox.
Check that ADP.
Yeah. Well, it's just, to me, it's just free money, even though it's my heavily taxed income, but I try and get that shit as fast as possible.
Yeah, this is our new responsible segment of Pump Not Soda, where we tell you, do your taxes, file them,
and get
your money back. Brett, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. You know what? We had a momentous occasion this week, guys.
Threesome?
If it was, I'm kind of upset I got left out, but okay.
We were imagining you there.
Yeah.
Now I'm weirded out.
No, guys, we hit 2,000 downloads.
2,000 and like 30 and a half downloads.
Holy 30 and a half.
Very nice. Crap. Yeah, we are.
Thanks for trying, Mom. You'll get it next time.
2016 is treating us off right.
Yeah, so thank you, listeners.
Thank you. That's pretty. We sounded pretty enthused.
For not wanting to spend your data on us, so you download us on Wi-Fi. And take us with you.
And someone was kind enough to donate us a champagne bottle to celebrate it.
Which Brett kindly decided to open and nearly take out my left eye.
Killed Brian.
Brian's face off. We would have had Brian Left Eye Lopez in here at the studio.
Yeah.
No,
I would not have been a happy camper.
Honestly, Brian Left Eye open Owens.
If you had hit him with that cork, he probably would have looked like Eli Manning during the Super Bowl.
Ooh.
Really good looking.
Yeah, you can't even say that with a straight face.
Not mentally retarded.
Oh, God, man. I couldn't. Just don't. The Super Bowl.
So this is probably a good time to say I want to take some credit for some of those downloads. Fan of the podcast. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Ooh,
oh, thank you very much.
Those are awesome.
Thank you, sir.
Voices are sexy.
So, Sean, you deserve to have a sip of this high class champagne that we have. So
yes, please.
Watch champs.
It's bubbly though. It's very, very bubbly.
I saw you almost pour it down yourself.
So yeah, Super Bowl happened Sunday. What did you guys think of the game? The game itself, what did you guys think?
So boring.
So boring.
I understand it was a good game, but it was boring.
Defensive,
I don't even think it was a good game.
It was
a defensive battle.
I mean, the quarterback sucked. I don't even think the defense looked that bad. Von Miller and what's his face? Ware. Dominated. Other than that, though, I can't think of a single name that was like somebody that was standing out in the crowd.
Luke Kuechly had a great game, and so did Thomas Davis Sr.
Actually, yeah.
On Carolina.
Josh Norman had a good game, too. He broke up a few passes, but I mean, let's be honest, it was a showcase for the Denver Broncos and their front seven, specifically their front four, and more specifically, DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller, who is by far the best defensive player in the league, no question.
I think the craziest thing is that this has kept
J.J. Watt.
The streak of number one defenses playing the Super Bowl and still undefeated.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, Denver was in the regular season had the number one overall defense.
Okay.
So
every team that has the number one ranked defense that has made it to the Super Bowl has won the Super Bowl.
Damn.
Ooh, interesting. Thanks for that stat, boy. What did we name? What did we name this kid again?
Short round.
That's short right.
Benjamin.
Yeah, Benjamin.
Benjamin Short Round.
Our intern. Our staff
I apologize,
intern.
Benjamin. It's,
Benjamin Short Round.
It's been a busy couple weeks.
I always forget his name.
Yeah, but other than that, though, I mean, I'd say the game itself wasn't too impressive. Sean, did you watch it?
I did not. Okay. Yeah, I'm being suspiciously quiet over here.
No, that's you lucked out because I didn't think there was anything with watching the game. And half the time, it's me convincing a bunch of people to watch the game that they actually don't care about because it's, I mean, for this year, too, it was two teams that I don't think anybody in San Diego gave a crap about.
I was rooting for Cam. I love Cam.
Okay. But the commercials, too, what you can usually sell somebody on is, hey, even if the game sucks, even if the teams you don't like, we got good commercials that are going to happen. This right. year, holy crap.
They didn't sell you on, Puppy, Baby, Monkey?
That was the weirdest thing. You know, and that was just...
That was a real thing.
Yeah.
Or Puppy, Monkey, Baby. Sorry. Puppy,
what?
Monkey, Baby.
Ever that monstrosity was named, it was so stupid.
You know, good for them, though. I mean, they got people talking about it. It was the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever seen on TV. But that, like, you could just totally tell that this year had such an internet influence of what is going to be, how do we make this the most ridiculous and how do we get the most people talking about it on the
Doritos
internet?
Doritos commercial is the only one that I actually kind of really laughed
Which
at.
Which one was that?
The one where...
Having a baby?
Yeah, the guy's eating Doritos at like his wife's ultrasound.
That one was...
And the baby starts following the bag of Doritos.
Yeah.
And shoots out of her as he throws the Dorito across the room.
Yeah.
But and people got upset. Like, an organization of women got upset and wrote a letter to Doritos complaining about that commercial.
Because babies are flying out of vaginas because of Doritos?
It was insensitive.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Anyway, yeah, but the commercials suck, too. I don't even think... Okay, what do you think? The two teams in it sucked more than the commercials or vice versa?
Coldplay's performance.
Oh.
Just kidding. Sorry, Chris Martin.
Halftime. I kind of laughed that people said Coldplay was the headliner.
You
really
liked
weren't.
Halftime?
I thought it was everything you wanted. It wasn't over... Like, it was just... It was fun, it was short, and it was musically good.
Everything that you wanted if you were blind and deaf?
No, I'm saying it's a lot better than Katy Perry coming out on a Megazord last
year.
Dude,
people are still talking about Left Shark.
Yeah, Left Shark all day, bro!
But that's not because the performance was good. That's because they had a dumb-looking... shark mascot that couldn't dance.
Hey, that's better than a dumb act that's trying to pretend to be good.
That couldn't dance or that changed the world's perception of dancing.
The battle between
Bruno and Beyonce
was pretty good.
That should have been the entire halftime show. Coldplay, go home. Like, you're boring as shit. Nobody wants to listen to you during a football game. You're not even American. You don't even like football. Like,
the only reason they were there was for like the tribute of the 50 years after... Beyonce. And-
Which I actually had a really big problem with because this was the 50th anniversary for the Super Bowl. Yes. And they really didn't do a good job of promoting that or celebrating it. I mean, 50 years is obviously a long time. And
it's
to be where they are
like
now.
50 years.
Yeah, it's like half a century. It comes after 49. It's a lot. But just like to where football is right now in society where it's like literally a part of everyone's life, like everybody knows what it is. I thought they would,
except Sean,
right?
Hey,
no, I'm not saying
which isn't
a bad thing.
It's
not a bad thing.
Definitely not a bad thing.
I respect you that you could do something else.
No, I have two kids. How many kids do you have?
Yeah, zero.
Okay, so
none that I know about.
-3.
Life is a little bit different. Yeah, I didn't watch last year's Super Bowl either. Actually.
Oh, you didn't, huh?
Yeah,
damn.
So I am the most unlikely person to ever be on your podcast ever. I didn't watch the Super Bowl. I don't have like TV. I don't have Dish. I don't have satellite. I have no idea what's going on outside of my own home. So
that's why we invited you on, buddy.
So we need to talk to the Butts, our guests. No, we're happy to have you.
But yeah. I am kind of into champagne.
There we are, man. And I'm the one that's...
If you, yeah, you just come for the
booze. If you spill any of that on our equipment...
Yeah, I know. I'm
not if, when.
You know what confused me, though, getting back to that halftime show, though? What sucked about it was I'd say it took about 2 minutes of the Coldplay performing that last act, and I was going, is this a in memoriam that they're doing for like all the people that passed away that had been performing.
It just happened to be that, like,
oh shit, I didn't even
Michael,
think about that.
They had Whitney.
Yeah. I felt like that, like, it was like this,
did they
like
Bowie on there?
It, like, it was almost confusing where I was, no, like, okay.
They had, like, the Rolling Stones. They showed Bruce Springsteen. They showed The Who.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I thought, I mean, when they first did that, I thought Bruce Springsteen was there. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. The Boss is here. But no, it was just a freaking flashback in this montage that was not done well because, I mean, obviously when they showed like Michael Jackson, you knew, but before that, I'm like, I'm confused. Like, where are all these people coming from?
Yeah. Who do you think, who would you have rather seen? Who would have been the perfect Super Bowl pairing? We're going to fire it around right here. Sean Mandarino, who would you like to see at the Super Bowl 51 as the halftime show act?
Super Bowl 51 as the halftime show? I'm going to go Kansas.
Nice. Ooh.
Carry on. I actually saw in concert years ago. They're not doing so well, gentlemen. They're like missing eyes and limbs. It's really bad. Kansas, and I'm going to say paired with a band that is like in my genre of music, Every Time I Die.
Ooh.
Okay.
Damn. That would be a pairing that I
that makes
I would...
no sense. That's just the first two bands that popped into my head when you put me on the spot to say.
Hey, Beyonce and Coldplay. They had that.
Yeah,
I
mean, right.
I didn't even watch the Super Bowl, and Coldplay sucked.
How about you, Dan?
Little Dicky.
Ooh.
Professional Handshake.
Save that money.
And Ariana Grande.
Why? So they're going to... He's going to try and molest
them,
her on stage?
Them on stage together would be something that I would enjoy.
Yeah, that'd be a good show. How about you, Brian?
Well, in that same vein, then I'd go with Bill Cosby and Selena Gomez.
Oh. I would... I think all the eyes would be glued to that halftime act for many reasons. We'd probably want to DVR it just for
yeah, but
evidence,
nobody would remember.
Evidentiary purposes.
Nobody would remember.
No.
No. It's like the Men in Black flash.
Vroom.
Only
neuralizer.
Drugs in your drink.
Hey, remember the third quarter? How it immediately happened after the end of the second quarter? For me, I think I would like to see Phil Collins coming back. He's making a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the air tonight.
And Mike Tyson.
At least on drums. At least on drums. Okay. Get Phil Collins back. And.
On drums.
And Cypress Hill.
Phil Collins and Cypress Hill. Right.
Boom. Bringing that back. I'm going the Sean Mandarino route on that, where I'd like to see just a pairing that, you know, is a pairing for the ages.
Mm. Yeah, you know who we'll probably get next year?
Bruno Mars.
No, no, no. I'll put 20 on it that we get like Imagine Dragons.
Imagine Dragons.
Come on.
And that'll be the Super Bowl that the LA Chargers.
I feel like
in.
they already topped out though. Like they.
No, that's why they would be the Super Bowl halftime.
Oh, because they're not.
Yeah. Hey, but at least you relevant. Guys are upset at the halftime for like a good reason, and not like. Why Rudy Giuliani's upset at the halftime show.
Yeah, elaborate on that, Dan.
So, if anyone has seen the comments that Rudy Giuliani and some other Fox News pundits have been saying about the halftime show, especially...
old white
more,
people, you
more
mean.
Specifically, Beyonce.
Old male white people.
When she debuted her new song, Formation, which talks about a few different issues, one of them being police brutality. She was dressed... kind of in the style of the 1993 Michael Jackson performance, and her backup dancers, they were kind of dressed like Black Panthers. So immediately, they are accusing Beyonce of being anti-police.
And of course, that's the natural
spark hate.
Yeah, that's the natural conclusion you make.
Oh, I don't know, celebrating a group that was created to protect Black people in this country from the KKK, and you know it is Black History Month and. When you're an artist and you have a platform, you're supposed to put a message out, and it didn't hurt anybody. It was celebrating, and people need to get over it. I'm going to refrain from going way in on this subject.
Yeah, I mean, old rich white dudes, just shut up. Like, your life is perfect. It can't get any better. Just shut up and let people express themselves.
He said
it's the First Amendment in the Constitution.
This ain't no Hank Williams.
Rudy said that you can't have a performance like that because when you're performing at the Super Bowl, you're talking to middle America. And apparently he believes you can't talk to middle
Rudy
America.
Rudy Giuliani has
race.
Never spoken to middle America. Like, let's get real.
That's the point, isn't it? Like, you don't send your message to the person who already knows your message. Like you spread that out to other individuals. Like that's a real part of the American narrative, the whole Black Panther movement, definitely, the civil rights movement.
Why yeah, I not? Mean, nobody got mad at Chris Martin for wearing his armband for the foundation. And I think San Francisco was really happy that everyone got mad at Beyonce because nobody got mad at them for having like a pro LGBT agenda.
Mm. Yeah. It's just, yeah. A reason just to draw some publicity to yourself.
What blows my mind is people couldn't find enough reasons to be pissed off about the shitty game. They had to get pissed off about that. They had to find more reasons to get pissed off about this shitty halftime performance.
You know what upset me the most was how many times Peyton Manning had to mention he was going to drink Budweiser.
Ooh.
Because I never believed for a second he was actually going to go home and drink Budweiser.
And we nailed it too. Papa John was front and center.
He kissed him.
Peyton Manning on the field.
Ooh.
So creepy. Like, so creepy.
Do you even think Archie kisses Peyton?
I don't even think Peyton's wife kisses Peyton.
Yeah. I feel like Peyton Manning is just an asexual.
No, he's not kids.
No, I know, but he just seems like he wouldn't like be affectionate with a woman. Like, he's too nice and professional.
Foreheads are asexual.
Exactly. I wonder if,
you know, he just yells Omaha over and over in the bedroom.
Oh, we could go down tangent on that one.
But
other to be than a that, fly on the wall.
Shitty commercials.
Literally shitty commercials.
Yes.
Diarrhea.
There's the
constipation.
That was the thing.
The intestine mascot.
You know that, yeah. So like, how many people do they think watch the Super Bowl that just have gastrointestinal and what is it like?
It's America, bro. It's a lot.
Skin disease problems. I saw, or is it like funguses? Funguses were all
over. Oh, the toenail fungus commercial.
Fungus
was
everywhere.
You don't need to make your mascot of a commercial an actual toenail with fungus and put a face on it. Like, we don't need to see that.
That's not going to send your product flying off the shelves?
No, it doesn't.
I just like their name, Jublia. Like, I don't know why I remember it. It's like, a terrible product.
I missed Tough Acting to Nactin with John Madden.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just can't imagine, like, me actually, like, sitting at home suffering from, like, such a debilitating condition as toe fungus and being so embarrassed to find medicine for it and then having a commercial with a cartoon mascot being the thing that it actually inspires me to get up off the couch to rid my toe. Like, I would never go, like, oh shit, now, okay, that's a cute mascot. Now I'm going to go get some toe fungus medicine.
Yeah, it's marketing, bro. That's why those guys get the big bucks.
Yeah, I hope they all got fired.
Well, except that's what's crazy. That's what's crazy to me, right? The commercials get more expensive every year. I think they were $5 million
for a 30-second segment.
$5 million for 30 seconds this year, but yet the commercials are getting worse and worse. I would think that would just be like a natural progression as you spend more money to even air it. That you would hopefully spend that money in production to, you know, just be talked about.
Well, you know what I noticed about 3 or 4 years ago? Do you remember, like, Budweiser and Miller Lite and Bud Light, they used to compete in who would have the funniest commercials.
The
and
frogs?
They would have a ton of commercials. And they each get, like, one now.
Well, see,
and they're not even, like, explicit about drinking. It's always, like, drink responsibly. And I don't understand what happened to the funny Bud Light. Like, Cedric the Entertainer 1 year was in, like, 8 different commercials for Bud Light.
Yeah. What I'd be curious to see is, like, I think there is such – what I think is happening right now is, like, what you're saying. It's $5 million for 30 seconds? Mm-hmm. That's insane. So $5 million for 30 seconds of ad time right now on the Super Bowl. When you think about it, what it was back in the day or whatever, like, I guarantee what's happening right now is there's such a stratification between how much dollars people can actually spend on advertising that the big corporations these days that can actually afford Super Bowl ads and spaces like that have so much money and so much liquid assets that they could just spend it on it without caring about how creative it is. Where you have everybody that actually wants to have a creative commercial that can't actually afford it these days.
Well, and you know the other thing, was there a GoDaddy commercial this year?
No.
No.
Well, because Dana, she's not
yeah,
the spokesman anymore.
She was a Tax Slayer ad.
Oh, jeez Louise.
She's moved on.
Yeah. She's not picking up that illustrious NASCAR career?
I don't think illustrious is a word that NASCAR fans know.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Maybe.
Yeah, bitchin' NASCAR career.
Yeah,
yeah, I'd say that. Yeah,
super dope NASCAR career?
I reckon she been having a super dope. Yeah, it doesn't work. No.
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 You have to say I reckon before you compliment a NASCAR career.
You're just like kicking all the NASCAR fans in the nuts right now. You know that, right?
Yeah, my parents love NASCAR, so it's okay.
Yeah. Shout out to Dan's parents.
Yeah. They don't listen. No. They're not like Brian's mom. They're not supportive.
No. I think this is a good place to take a break, though. We'll come back, though. We have a few things on board. We got Brian's movie review. Sorry we didn't tease what we had on the plate earlier, I guess, but we got Brian's movie review
coming
up.
We're trying to keep them guessing.
Sorry.
Yeah, I guess we're throwing it for the Audible.
Yeah,
we're playing the Audible Super Bowl season. Or Super Omaha. Bowl season. Super Bowl weekend.
Omaha.
Calling it Audible. But Brian's got a movie review. What are you reviewing this week?
This week I'm reviewing The Big Short, which is not referring to Dan's genitalia, but in fact is a full-length feature film.
Nice.
Also not like Jan Dan's junk.
And we also have some important wrestling news that came up that just actually struck like two days ago. We'll probably be a little bit behind once this episode releases, but I think it's important to talk about. It's going to have quite an impact on the industry. And we've got our guest Sean Mangiarino here. Sean, you got a Kickstarter project that's coming out?
Yeah, I do. It's going to launch at the time that you're hearing this. The Kickstarter will be live.
Ooh. Yes. And can you tease a little bit about it before we got a break?
We'll interview about it afterwards. It's an amazing thing that you should all stay listening to this podcast so that you can find out what it's about.
So that's how you sell something.
Oof.
And he didn't.
That's chapter one.
No one paid him $5 million for that advertisement. But damn, did he nail it. All right, so we will be right back after this short commercial break. Hey, everybody. It is Dan from Pop Not Soda here to tell you about our first event that we are throwing. It will be a charitable bar crawl in North Park, San Diego on March 19th. If this music is any indication, we're going back for the Royal Stumble, a la the Royal Rumble theme from WWE. So dress up as your favorite professional wrestler. We'll have some games, some raffles, and a best dress contest that may win you a championship belt. So please check out our Facebook and Twitter for more information about the Royal Stumble, Pop Not Soda's charitable bar crawl on March 19th in North Park, San Diego.
Suplex City, bitch. Howdy ho, y'all. Cheers to our 2,000 plus downloaders. Thanks again, guys. You are not about to get on a Virgin Atlantic flight. That music means, once again, it's time for Brian's homeless movie reviews. This week, I am reviewing The Big Short, which is a film directed by Adam McKay. So you might be expecting this to be a comedic picture, but and it kind of is, but for the most part, definitely a dramatic film. Lots of stars in this one. You got Steve Carell, Brad Pitt, Ryan Gosling, and Christian Bale. So definitely a star-studded cast. The movie basically follows around a few different individuals that essentially short the housing market in the mid-2000s and just make boatloads of cash. I'm talking about like billions of dollars in some instances. So just kind of interesting because for a very long time, they are just considered stupid, crazy, unrealistic, that what they are talking about will actually come to fruition, meaning one of the most stable investments of all time, real estate in the early 2000s. So a lot of the movie is just kind of explaining how this whole crisis happened and which led to the financial downfall of the late 2000s, 2007, 2008, and so on. So it's really interesting and educational in in that frame. As well, what's really clever that Adam McKay does is he brings in some current celebrities to kind of explain things when things start to get really convoluted. Because when you talk about mortgage-backed securities, when you talk about CDOs, when you talk about tranches and all these different grades of bonds that were insured against all of these loans, it does get very confusing, and for good reason, because these bankers are pieces of shit. And just made it such a confusing process that nobody could actually dig under and figure out what these guys were doing while they were just making, you know, tons of cash hand over fist.
It seems like every time that they got in trouble or were sweated at all, they came up with a new term that somehow dug them out of the hole.
Yeah, or just like a new process. Yeah. Again, like it's really interesting to see because it definitely explains a lot of what you might not have understood. That eventually led to, the recession in 2008. And then as well, like the collateral effects that it had within the economy. So
this is a very serious documentary. It's like an instructional video on if you were to sell or buy a house.
Not really specifically about buying or selling a house, more so, like a little picture.
Screw the economy over.
It's kind of like a glimpse into how Wall Street operates. And you just realize that everybody is a scumbag. Everybody's out to make money. And the big companies are there for a reason and are not in a place to do anything besides continue their gigantic profit stream. What is pretty cool about the film is there are instances where the characters will break that fourth wall and they'll explain like what happens in reality and then go back into the movie because it's a movie and it has to be like that, so it needs to be convenient. So definitely, you have a few things thrown in there where Adam McKay, kind of takes it down a level, makes it a little bit lighter. But, he is nominated for Best Director. It is a film that's made really well. Again, all the actors are great. Brad Pitt and Christian Bale might have been a little bit unnecessary in the film. Like their characters do play big parts, and Christian Bale is actually the plays the first guy who kind of did the analytics to figure this out and bet against the housing market and create the literal product which you could buy to bet against the housing market, because at that time that product didn't exist because nobody was going to bet against the housing market. Really good film. There's a reason why it's nominated for Best Picture, Best Director. A couple guys got nominated for performance as well. So final verdict on The Big Short, we're going another 4 out of 5.
Ooh.
Quarters.
Sounds like you've had a good time with the movies so far this year.
I have. I have enjoyed my movie viewing experiences so far. And then this weekend, I believe I'm going to catch another film, which I'm really excited about.
How to Be Single?
No, actually, Ride Along 2. I've really been meaning to get some.
After that first Ride Along
that
review,
definitely got some Oscar noms this year too, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, actually, yeah. That wouldn't be because,
Oh, they're black.
So,
oh well, no, I was
black people can't be nominated.
The white cinematographer for that film.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, fellas, I'm talking about the next Marvel release, Deadpool.
Ooh,
the first R-rated Marvel film.
And I think this is the first. This is the first Fox release post Marvel partnership.
That's a lot of words.
Yes, if you don't know what I mean, is last year. Sony made a deal with Marvel to lend them Spider-Man. So that left Fox as the only other studio with Marvel rights who wasn't getting help from Marvel. So this is kind of like their attempt to stand outside of X-Men and be successful making a superhero movie, because their last one, Fantastic Four, is probably the worst movie I have ever seen.
So I was going to ask, that's Fox, right?
Yeah.
That's Fox.
Okay.
Sony is Spider-Man. So Sony has help now.
Okay.
From Marvel, as per their agreement. But Fox is on their own.
Yeah. So Deadpool is coming out, though. We have Deadpool, who I'd say the backstory, if nobody knows about it, I don't know too much about him, but he's basically the Merc with the mouth. And from what I've said, from what I've seen, I've read a few comics of his. He seems to be the only comic book character that actually knows that he exists in a comic book as a comic book character.
I like to think of him as like Zach Morris.
Timeout.
Rated NC-17.
Yeah. He basically pulls the timeout, looks towards the audience, tells them how ridiculous the comics are happening and what's going on and what he has to do to save the day, and then goes back to slicing people's heads off.
And in his communication, very, very vulgar. And something that you're not going to be used to if you want a traditional Marvel movie.
Yeah.
I'm very interested. The reviews that I've heard is from the opening credits. They just throw you in the Deadpool world and you're along for the ride. And it just kind of engrosses you in this movie watching experience that is unique.
Yeah. Now, and I think from what I've heard, too, the origin of this character was basically, I've heard part of the origin of this character was somebody that was somewhat tired of, I'd say, the recycled comic book characters that continue to come out. So this was almost his middle finger to the comic book industry in the early 90s, creating this character or whatever. But going to you, Sean, where you are a author and things like that. Are there any authors that just frustrate you or any genres that you see that you would love to just tear apart and create a character like this to just...
That's a pretty big jump right there. How do we go from Deadpool to authors that... well, yes, there are certain authors and styles of writing that I would definitely want to like stop doing that and maybe like redirect. But man, that feels like a pretty big segue to just.
But could you be the Deadpool for any? If you could be the Deadpool for any genre, what
Deadpool.
Would you say?
So I know very little about Deadpool other than the old school Marvel comic cards that I have still in a closet at my parents' house from like 15, 16 years ago.
Does mint condition?
But I agree with you guys. He's a powerful character in that he breaks the tradition, right? And he breaks the fourth wall too. I think that if I could turn that back towards you guys, from what you've seen, coming from a person who hasn't seen any movie previews or anything, do you think that legacy will continue in this movie? Is he going to break the fourth wall? Is he going to continue to kind of like address the audience and step outside of the typical kind of genre and setting that we see him in?
So that's what I've seen is from the trailers, he does break the fourth wall, but it seems almost like, is that going to continue throughout the movie or is that just going to be an aside that's going to exist as one joke?
So I am very interested because this movie was made because either Ryan Reynolds, the director, or two producers who did the test footage illegally released the footage from 2011.
Hey, man. It was like hacked. And, nobody knows.
Ryan Reynolds said he's 70% innocent. Like he's like 70% sure it wasn't him.
Because that's basically how it happened.
Yeah, and so what we've seen in the trailer is a lot of what seems to be that test footage reshot. So I think they're actually doing what like DC hasn't done, and they're not showing you a lot of the movie in the trailer. Like every time I see a trailer, it's like the one scene over and over again, where you do see a little bit of the wall breaking. And from what I heard, it starts at the beginning of the movie and it's there for the entire time. What I'm interested to see, though, is I think it may only happen when he's in costume.
I was just going to say, because that's when he's the actual character. So I think they're like when they do the backstory.
Wade Wilson.
Show Wade Wilson, the guy before he becomes Deadpool, I think it's going to be a traditional movie. But then when he actually gets into the Deadpool character, it's going to be what we're used to.
Yeah, and I think we're going to start out, like, I think if I were, like, drawing up this movie, we would start out with him already being Deadpool, then flashback to what happened, and then you come back to, you know, what's going on. It's him telling a story, so that's an easy way to frame that fourth wall. If he's narrating his, like, flashback story, that's kind of, like, how you get audiences who aren't used to it into...
To believe in it.
Yeah, believing it, adjusting it, and I could be completely wrong because this movie's coming out tonight, and I've seen it tomorrow, and I could be like, well, I was dumb because I'm way off base. But I do think he's going to break it throughout because you have to. He has a video game that came out a couple years ago where he's constantly breaking the wall. he's a character in Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Voiced by Nolan North.
Yeah, he's a character in Marvel vs. Capcom 3 where he'll use like his energy bar to hit the other guy. Like,
yeah, he is.
Or he'll talk to you and be like, that's all you did? Like, you're shitty. Give somebody else the controller. Like, and yeah, the other awesome thing you have to know about Deadpool is he's kind of psychotic. And so he's erratic. And I'm very interested because I think Ryan Reynolds is perfect for it. And I'm glad that they're not going with whatever that monstrosity was in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah. Weapon 10.
Well, they covered...
Or Weapon 11.
Right. They covered his mouth so he couldn't talk. Like, that's...
And then the end the credit whole scene is Deadpool him, character. His, like, head, like, severed head, like, shh, like, being alive, and now, like, his mouth being open. It was like, oh, no.
That's so dumb.
So dumb.
That is so dumb. So dumb.
Like, the only reason why that movie is not that bad is because Fantastic Four was worse.
I don't know, man. That movie is pretty...
Have you
pretty
seen
terrible.
Fantastic Four?
I have. I've seen both.
I would side with Brian on that. I haven't seen Fantastic Four, but Wolverine Origins is probably one of the most terrible movies I've ever seen in my life.
Like the only thing that was redeemable about the movies is
Gambit,
Sabretooth.
What?
For the beginning, and that's it.
Did you watch the same movie that Brian and I watched?
5 minutes of Wade Wilson. Before they did whatever they did, the Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, in the elevator shaft on the way up. Yeah.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, everything else is terrible about that movie.
Yeah.
Especially the CGI'd Professor Xavier at the very end.
I would never defend a movie if only the first 5 minutes were good featuring one character. Okay.
I'm just saying, like, the taste in my mouth left by Fox superhero movies is Fantastic Four. And I'm ready to have a palate cleanser.
Yeah, yeah. Now, how R do you think that this will be?
Hard R.
I think if you played a drinking game to how many F-bombs will be in this movie, you're going to be feeling pretty good.
Okay, okay. Violence?
Hard.
Yeah.
Violence.
But it won't seem as hard because it's comedy.
Yeah.
Because Blade is the original rated R superhero movie.
Yeah.
And that's really violent. And so I think it'll be on the same level as Blade. But when you frame it with, haha, funny joke after I shoot this guy in the head.
And as Deadpool calls it in his comic books, boobies.
I don't think there's any nudity.
Okay.
From what I saw in the listings, but that, you know, they may just didn't have space to list it.
That's bullshit.
that's the only reason Brian does the movies.
And walking out.
Brian's face just drops right there. He's not going to be watching this movie now.
Unbelievable.
Really excited for, what's his name, TJ Miller?
Yeah, he's going to be real funny, yeah. For sure.
I was very sad when he met his untimely death in Transformers because he was the best part of that last movie.
Oh, when he got like frozen or vaporized or whatever.
So I'm glad that he's back. But yeah, Deadpool's just a really interesting character. He's one that fans really love. And so we'll see how Fox does with a superhero movie that's not directed by Bryan Singer.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, actually, because they put all their chips in with Bryan Singer.
And he puts all his chips in with...
Go there. You've done it already last week. We had people talking about that comment last week, Dan, in the first 6 minutes. So we're going to cut you off right there. Let's go to break. We'll come back with an interview with Sean Mangiarino about his kickstarting project. We have some wrestling news that's coming up that's teasing in with the Royal Stumble that we got in March 19th.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we will catch you on the flip side.
Yes.
Yes.
That's a T. I just got that.
Yes?
Yes.
Yes?
This is a crazy beat right here.
I'm a little scared, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. We are back. Ooh. Sounds
ooh,
so nice.
Oh. I went from scared to aroused really quickly.
Yeah, we chose this music to segue right into our Sean interview.
What's up, Sean Mangiarino? How you doing?
So you have been
quiet,
teasing. Well, yes, you have been
I don't
quiet.
Know what the hell you
you've,
guys are talking?
You've
about.
Been, you've been saving
best guest ever.
You've been saving the gold, as we call it in the professional podcasting business, the gold. You've been teasing this Kickstarter all night.
Yes.
So
yes, I have.
Been. Are you ready to let our listeners know what it's about?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Your target demographic, they have kids, right?
Of course.
Yes.
They want to have kids.
Yes.
They
yes.
want to have sex.
They're definitely making babies. Exactly.
Okay.
Whether it's a byproduct of what they're doing, yes, they are having kids.
Okay. Okay. So we're in the right place. So this is the part where I get to talk, right?
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Right. Exactly. It's all so yours. Give us a rundown, Sean. So what is the Kickstarter campaign? How long is it going to go? Like certain things like that. What's the name of this project? Just give us a rundown, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the time that you're hearing this, a Kickstarter project is going to go live. It's called My Name is Fall. It is a children's book, which hopefully resonates with you who are listening to this. It may or may not, but it is more of a niche book. And I guess the reason why is that it is a book where the setting is post-apocalyptic. And the way that basically coming into this, Brett is a little bit familiar with my past work. He's actually proofread some yep. of the earliest chapters
Fall
of... Yeah, some of my other work, but most of my writing career is devoted to short fiction, and I have a number of like small publishing credits and magazines that you've never heard of, and like if you type in the URL, you'll find it, but otherwise, like no one's ever going to read this stuff ever.
It's in the dark deep net.
Yeah, it's out there somewhere, and if you want to find it, you can go to studiomandarino.com, and there will be a link, and you can go read this stuff, right?
There we are.
Studiomandarino.com.
That's right, and you know, as we're talking about this, I'm realizing how awkward it is to ask you to try and figure out how to spell my last name, and if you Google it, it's not going to find me, because there's just, like, Google doesn't care about me, but
not yet,
go ahead
least.
And guess, and, you know, if you find it, you do.
Studio Mangerino, M-A-N-G-E-R-I-N-O. N-O.
Wow,
boom.
Look at there that. Yeah,
those are letters.
Champagne. Champagne's
that,
a little bit in me, too.
That's how you spell it. So my novel, as Brett knows, or just some of my fiction, really has to do with realism. Mm-hmm. It tends to be grittier, and I would say that it tends to be an examination of morality and ultimately what happens to morality once the systems of, let's say, religion and law go away. And really, at the core, what is morality then? Mm-hmm. And so because of that, the book is, it's gritty. It's uncomfortable in a way, but I think worth reading, obviously. Otherwise, I wouldn't take the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so.
Talk about downselling yourself.
Okay, here we go. So at some point, I start thinking about, you know, the weird thing is raising kids is a hell of a thing. It really is, like, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh, it's the most magical thing that's ever happened to me. It is. But, like, that's not why I'm here. But it's really strange when bad things happen. You have to find out how to communicate that to your child. The pet dies. The grandparent dies. The grandparent is an alcoholic. Like, you have to figure out how to talk to your kid about these things in a way that makes them better. You can't hide the reality from them, but you have to find a way to communicate them so that they're better for having understood it, right?
Yeah, so I was like 5 and my t-ball coach passed away, and my parents were like, yeah, he passed away. And I was like, well, when is he coming back? Because at 5 years old, I don't know what passed away means.
Yeah. That's perfect. So at some point I was thinking, like, the protagonist in the novel is in his late, let's say late teens. Well, he wasn't always there. At some point, he was a 3-year-old. He was a 4-year-old. And then I just started thinking, like, what would it be like to raise a kid? So in post-apocalyptic fiction, we see Mad Max and we see all sorts of these movies. But what is it like to raise a kid in that environment? And how do you communicate to them the world around them such that they really understand and can grow? But also you have to protect them, right? Mm-hmm. So that is the genesis of Fall Mowgli, which is a series of children's books based around a child who's growing up in a post-apocalyptic world. So the
Fall
the,
Mowgli or I Am Fall?
I Am Fall.
Oh, sorry, yeah, okay.
My name is Fall.
Yeah, okay. My name is Fall.
My name
sorry.
Fall.
My name is Fall.
Yeah, I
my
should be very clear on that, right?
Sorry.
And you know, the children's books technically are tied to the novel, which is the Fall Mowgli.
That's right. Okay.
Novels. Okay. So, yeah. So the children's books, My Name is Fall. Basically, you have a kid, and the kid lives in this world, and the kid needs the same nourishment and the happiness and the fairy tales and the magic that any kid needs ever in any other existence. And so the point of the book is to be able to tell a story where if I was to read it to my kid, they'd be like, oh, cool. Yeah, look at that's a cool story. Like there's magic there and there's trolls and there's adventure and things like that. But if you're the parent reading it, you're like, oh, I totally get that. That is like some actually really serious shit going on. And so to give you an example, in the children's books, the little boy believes in trolls. His world is inhabited by him, his papa, his dog, and trolls. And trolls are just kind of like the generic name for everybody else in the world. He doesn't know what that is. And, you know, the way that it's described to him is they are actually monsters that exist out there. And he knows to hide. If a troll happens to come his way, he knows to get out of sight as soon as possible because trolls eat little children. And it's very kind of like fairy tale-ish. But if you understand the nature of the post-apocalyptic world, you know that they're not trolls. Those are people, and people who are willing to do brutal things to survive. So it's, if you were to read it just verbatim, it's user friendly. Like your kid is not going to go like, oh, there are undertones of violence and starvation, and depravity.
Daddy.
If you're a parent, you would be like, yeah, like that's some tough stuff to raise a kid through. The reason why that's so important to me is like, that's, I know the book is set in post-apocalyptic California, Southern California. But that's life every day. Like every day we're trying to figure out how to parent our kids through traumas and tragedies and death and racism and violence and like financial obligations. And like the times when you're thinking like, shit, I can't take my kid to Disneyland because I have to pay a U-turn ticket, which actually happened to me recently.
Yeah, we were talking about it before the episode of it.
So that's the nature of the book. The book is very simple. To give you a little backstory on it, at one point I was talking with an illustrator who was going to illustrate the book. Kickstarter is a hell of a thing. I am familiar with Kickstarter because I like board games, and Niece was actually one of the individuals who introduced me to board games. A lot of board games will come through Kickstarter, and so Kickstarter is a great way to launch projects. You get a chance to really voice your opinion on these projects and things like that. And it just made sense to take this route because the work itself is not necessarily something it's not something that you necessarily see at a Barnes and Noble, I guess. I mean, I hope one day, sure.
Well, I mean, I think it has the potential for sure.
Yeah.
But what you're saying too, is it's a good Kickstarter is a good grassroots campaign though, where what you were saying earlier is you can find your niche. You can find out how you identify with your niche from there and then expand from there to just make it more appealing.
Absolutely. So when I launched the campaign, hey, can I be real with you guys?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So this is my background. I'm the guy who always had potential, right? Like when I was doing my undergrad, I had the teachers who would say like, let's nominate your paper to go to a conference. Or when I was doing my MFA at San Diego State, my thesis was in fiction based around the high desert town of Phelan. And I literally had an instructor who said, this is really good. Come talk to me and we'll figure out how to get this published. And I don't come through with those things. And the reason is it's easier to be the guy with potential than the guy who has potential that fails, if that makes sense.
Right? I totally hear you.
For sure.
Okay. So this project is very personal to me in a way that whether or not it succeeds, it's like me actually being willing to fail.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Coming through with something.
Yeah. So the financials, it's very meager. It's very lean. It's just enough. I can't tell you the specifics of it now because over this weekend, I'm just going to go and recalibrate, make sure that the publishing costs, the ISBN costs, and all of those things are what they were 2 months ago when I was really working on these things. But it's all very lean. The pledge cost will most likely be $25, which would be a book signed by me with a custom book plate saying, thank you, you know, for That's bringing rad. This to life. There would be an option to pledge more, at which point you would be a name listed in a page in the book that says, hey, this exists because of you and here's your name.
How much does it cost to be a troll in the book?
Yeah, I was about to ask. I have to go back and look at the
free if you have Brett's face.
I believe it's around $50.
Okay.
Brett, I think you can afford and again, $50 to make Brett a troll.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm going to go through and calibrate all that. But I guess the point is that the whole project is around just achieving the minimum amount of money possible to make the book a reality and then ultimately to send it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's important to me simply because it approaches... So I'm a dad. I have two kids, 2 and 4. I read children's books to them every single night, and I'm very much aware of what is compelling children's literature and what's not, and what has substance and what doesn't. And so, like, I feel very compelled to put something out there that has a little bit of an edge to it. I don't know that there's something that exists quite like what I want to put out there that I could read to my child that would have these very kind of adult undertones. And that's ultimately what I want to do. I want to have a book that is pleasing to a child, but really gives a nod to a parent that has to, like, bring their child through all of the traumas and tragedies of life.
That's a, I mean, and that's something I haven't heard of before. I mean, and like what you're saying too, is you read these books to your kids all the time, and obviously you haven't seen anything like this before. So yeah, it's a very, very cool thing. That's, I'd say it's original as hell.
Yeah, absolutely. And, so I had an illustrator at one point, and we were going back and forth, and it became too complicated. The cost to get an illustrator to do the illustrations, the amount of time it would take, it just wasn't appropriate. To do a project like this, you really need a quick turnaround time. And I wasn't getting that out of this illustrator. And while I was kind of going through this dilemma, my boy is 4 years old. He's a good kid.
Who we haven't told yet, actually, is the boy that is the...
He's the voice of our intro.
He is the voice of the intro, Cohen.
That's right. So yep.
Pop Not Soda's own
don't know how
Cohen.
I feel about Cohen there, Sean.
he doesn't feel too good about you either, dude.
Well, he wants to piss on you, so he's seriously A-okay in my book.
Yeah, man, he's a good kid, and I kind of have a do-it-yourself attitude, and so, you know, given the choice between... So I don't want to get really heavy into the financials of it, but if I was to use an illustrator, it becomes like a $30 to $35 pledge with a goal of $6,000-$7,000 to make the whole thing happen on a timeline that is solely based on the illustrator and when they get those illustrations back to me.
Yeah, you're at the mercy of them.
At the same time, I want to give a shout out to, I think, somebody who's been on your show before, but Elliot Noteware. He introduced me to some software, which is awesome. And so for the aesthetic piece of it, I'm using some stylized images that use Cohen, but use kind of the local area of Escondido and some of really like the shitty places in Escondido to kind of convey the post-apocalyptic world, which is important because it takes that like $35 pledge and $7,000 goal, and it reduces it to $25 with shipping. And again, I have to check all this out, but it would be like a couple $1,000s to make.
That is an extreme cutback on cost. Yeah, and what you actually need to raise. So now this is going to be launching on Monday when we do the podcast.
When this episode drops.
So give us some details where we can find the Kickstarter, things like that. Now what do we do? We go to Kickstarter, we type in
My Name is Fall.
And you can find it there, and you're gonna have some different pledge goals. Obviously, is that what you mentioned? Okay.
So I've spent a lot of time in Kickstarter, and I feel like I know kind of what is user friendly and what's not. I'm actually trying to keep it very simple. $25 basically contributes to the project and gets you the book signed. If you want to throw an extra 10 at it, I'll write whatever you want into the book, like basically a custom inscription to you, thanking you for your work. And I do have a pledge level at which point your name is published in the book.
Dan has
like
this
whatever.
Terrible,
yeah, you're looking
whatever
at me
I want.
Very
Dan
weird
has
right
this
now.
Terrible look on his face, like he's going to actually pull.
Hey,
some
go
stuff.
For it. So the point of this is like it's a kid's book, but it's not a kid's book.
And Cohen, look at this troll right in the back. Yeah.
So on Monday it launches. If you go to Kickstarter, you can look up My Name is Fall. The other way you can go about it is if you go to studiomangiarino.com, there's going to be a link to the project. That's also where you can see other writing samples from me. What I'll tell you is that the writing that you'll find on my website is not quite the same as what you'll find in this project, because this project is really tailored towards parents and to kids, and my typical writing is not.
Yeah,
My short fiction is very realistic, cut and dry. The fiction is very gritty, very adult.
And if you have any trouble, both those links will be up on our Facebook on Monday. So if you're checking this out on podbean.com, head over to our Facebook / Pop Not Soda Official.
And you'll be able to find Sean's links for his Kickstarter and Studio Mandarino.
We will have those links. So I got a quick question before we wrap up this segment too, Sean. When you write this material, do you write it from a children's book perspective, or do you write it from an adult's book, like an adult perspective, trying to create a kid's book out of that?
I write it from a parent's perspective.
That's awesome.
So my background, my education is in writing. That's kind of like, if anybody asked me who I am, that's who I am. And if you'll believe me on this, I can tell when the writing is good, when it makes me emotional as the creator of the writing. And I've written a lot of shit over the years, and some of it has been published that really didn't make me that emotional. And for this project, as I read through it, like, it makes me emotional. But very, like, intentionally so. So let's say this project is successful. I have other books kind of in line.
When this project is successful.
This project is successful. Thank you. You always want to come from a stance of success.
Yeah, you need that pop not soda push. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Three extra people.
and then as I'm kind of Dan going Brian through the content of subsequent books, like, it hurts in a way, if that makes sense. Like, so one of the future books deals with the kid basically not having a mother and how he basically picks up a cell phone. And he doesn't know what a cell phone is because he doesn't live in a world where cell phones function. But his papa tells him, like, yeah, you could call anybody you want. And he calls his mom and says, hey, I'm a good boy. Like, I'm doing good, and I love you and I miss you. And, like, as I go back through that content, it makes me, like, super emotional. And that doesn't happen with everything that I produce.
Thanks for kicking me in the gut right there. Okay. Appreciate that one.
So that's what we're going for, right? Like, we want it to hit. I honestly guess the point here is to create something that a kid would enjoy but hits you in the gut as a parent.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's
like
what
that.
Pixar does with every movie, and they're worth billions of dollars. Exactly. So I think you're on the right track. Well, yes, so please make sure to check out that Kickstarter that has gone live as you're listening to our voices in your head right now.
One more time, Sean, where can we find it?
Kickstarter, look up My Name is Fall.
And then what else?
StudioMangerino.com.
And how do we spell Mangerino?
MangerIno.
Boom.
If you have trouble, both links will be up on our Facebook.
Yeah. Sean, that was a great interview. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, we appreciate you having
appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And yeah, I think that was a great episode, guys. We might be taking a break next week to prep up a little bit for the Royal Stumble.
Yes, you will be missing us next week. So make sure you listen to the first 5 episodes of this new season at least 28 times before we come back.
Mm-hmm. Maybe 30.
We have Kickstarter goals too.
Yeah, the Kickstarter is, if you start listening to our podcast, we kick Brett.
So please listen. It's a great deal.
I'll start punching you in the face.
But yeah, so as we've mentioned multiple times this segment, please go check out that Kickstarter for I Am Fall. That's right?
My name is Fall.
My name is Fall. I will not forget that from now on. My name is Fall. And you can find Sean. His links will be posted on our Facebook. If you don't know where that is, that's facebook.com/popnotsodaofficial. Thank you for listening every Monday, except for next Monday, to us, your weekly Sits Patch of Pop Culture, right here on Podbean and iTunes. If you miss us in our week absence, you can follow us on Twitter. Brian's at BOwen619, Brett at Niece's Pieces, and myself at Dan_Perez_.
Shoot, I think that's a great way to
Did that so well. And I left everybody speechless.
Dan just dropped the mic right there.
Yes. So, again, we are on a break next week, but we will be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. So stay tuned, and thank you for listening. 2,000 downloads.
I miss you guys already. We'll be right back.